Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. You can tune in to Cutting the Curd every Monday at heritageradionetwork.org. And you should check out the site regardless, because we have a brand new website, actually, with news and different food tidbits of all sorts that are in addition to the great shows on the network. So be sure to check it out, heritageradionetwork.org. Today's show is Making Cheese in the City with Brooklyn Kitchen. We're lucky to have Michelle Warner with us, who is the Director of Education at the Brooklyn Kitchen. Thank you, Michelle.
You're welcome.
First tell us, so you're the Director of Education at the Brooklyn Kitchen. But I have to say this because I read it on Good Food Jobs. How did you go from being on the Oprah show to Director of Education at Brooklyn Kitchen?
Well, I went to a school to do like set decorating for theater and television, and I was doing set decorating for the Oprah show, and the show was wrapping up. It was clear that we weren't going to have a job for much longer.
Uh-huh.
And I also wasn't interested in buying like throw pillows and fitting decorative spaces, I guess, anymore. I wanted to be doing more education stuff, and we were doing a lot of food shows on the Oprah show, and so I went ahead and decided to try and pursue actually being a culinary producer on the Food Network, which is where I was headed. And so I went to culinary school and got an internship at the Food Network, but while I was in culinary school, I worked at a recreational cooking school, and it was just such a good fit for me that after my internship at the Food Network, I looked for a place similar, and the Brooklyn Kitchen had like just moved to their new space, and they had these cooking classrooms. They just needed to like build out the class curriculum a little bit more, and so yeah.
So that's how it happened.
Yeah.
And so the history of classes at the Brooklyn Kitchen, I feel like I need to say this just because I remember it, and it was such a ridiculous thing, but my friend Tom Mylan, who, you know, back in the day we worked at Murray's together in like 2003. And I remember hearing about one of the very first classes at the Brooklyn Kitchen when it was still on Lorimer Street, when Tom did a pig butchering class. And I think he came in like and had like this pig head and just like stuck a knife in this pig head. And I was just imagining that store, which was much smaller than your current location, yeah, filled with people cutting up a pig with like a pig head on the counter. And I would say you've come a long way, baby.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, definitely the space now is significantly larger. And it was those pig butchering classes and the knife skills classes that kind of pushed the owners, Harry and Taylor, to move to a larger space. And so the kitchen, you know, to have more pig butchering classes that weren't like having to shut down the entire retail store so we could get people in the classroom. So, yeah.
Yeah. And for anyone who hasn't been to the Brooklyn Kitchen, it's a really, really great store. It's on the address, I think, is 100 Frost Street. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. It's right on the corner of like Frost and Meeker. And there's a wonderful sort of space where, you know, there's a grocery component with dry goods. There's produce, there's cheese, there's dairy. There's the meat hook in the back, which is a great butcher shop. Then there's all the kitchenware, you know, and wonderful things that I end up buying way too much of because I'm just like, oh, I need that for my kitchen when I go in. And then there's this gorgeous classroom. So it's really a great sort of multi-purpose space.
Yeah, it's definitely your one-stop shop for food, eating, and educating, for sure.
So tell me a little bit about the curriculum, and how did you develop, how did you go about creating this job for yourself and developing the curriculum?
Well, there was already like a good amount of interesting people teaching some classes in there, and just decided, I ended up putting like just a little more structure into the program, and kind of sitting down with Harry, one of the owners, and figuring out like what our mission was and what our what we were kind of headed towards in our direction, and that helped educate filling out the class curriculum. And definitely I do a lot of consuming of, you know, food media to see kind of what people are interested in and what trends are, you know, what people are following. You know, when the Brooklyn Kitchen started, it was a large portion of what they did was being a place to get canning supplies. And so we definitely have a good like basis of pickling and jam making classes. But, you know, I was just thinking the other day how our economy is, you know, on the rise and housing costs are going up and all those things. And I think it's also leading to people to like expand themselves outside of simple, like people know how to like pickle, and we still have pickling classes, but maybe, you know, it's time for like more broader classes or next level classes for that sort of homemaker DIY shtick.
Yeah. Well, when we were talking a week or so ago, I still have this like dream in my head of like that urban homesteader boot camp, you know, like I feel like people, want to learn all these different skills, and you already teach many of them: pickling, butchering, cheesemaking.
Our cheesemaking classes.
Which I want to talk about more in detail. But yeah, that's really interesting. And it's interesting that you say it in relation to the economy, because I feel like, in my mind, the more the economy improves, the more people kind of outsource that kind of thing. But do you see the reverse? Do you feel like people with their leisure time actually want to invest in
I think it's
educating themselves?
In some ways, people are like, oh, I don't, like, maybe aren't like, I need to like learn how to make my own granola, but there's someone who's making really great granola that I'd rather focus on buying something more specialty. But I think that having more financial flexibility, you relax a little and you want to spend your evenings, you know, doing something to enrich yourself. New Yorkers are people who love to learn. Like, it's the new school is here, and there's so much adult education that's going on. And I think that that's a great way that people like to recreate. Mm-hmm. And so getting to expand yourself and learning how to do like a lot of our like ethnic food classes, like Thai street food.
I saw Chinese takeout dinner for couples. I got to learn how to do that, because Patrick, my husband, he loves Chinese food, and I actually can't. I hate it. I mean, I love good Chinese food, but I don't like takeout that we get from our neighborhood place, because it's awful. So I feel like I have to come do that class.
Yeah,
so
we just added that one, and it's a really fun. It's a fun like take on it, because New York, having lived in like 8 different states, I feel like New York has some of the best Chinese takeout, and it's kind of neat to learn those skills. I know that like having every instructor teaches me a lesson before they teach at the Brooklyn Kitchen, and having like learned things while those, you know, different instructors like Diana Kwan, who teaches that class, taught me some things while she did a scallion pancake, and that was just really cool to be like, oh, this is like pretty easy. I have flour, I have scallions, I can make that. It's pretty satisfying to be able to create that stuff and customize it as well.
All right, well, I'm gonna sign up for that one for sure. So how do you find your instructors? And that must be a pretty serious vetting process, because if you're gonna sort of authorize this person to teach, how do you sort of go about that?
I always think like sometimes I've set up a really intense job for myself when we get instructors, because I am really particular about who we have teaching, because I want our students to have like the best experience. And I think we have people really walk away satisfied with their classes at the Brooklyn Kitchen, because we've made sure that they're like working with a professional or someone who's confident in what they're doing, and they've done it before. And so some of our instructors come to me, and they just email classes at the Brooklyn Kitchen, and they sound interesting, and they come in for an interview. And others, I pursue. Our cheesemaking instructor, definitely, like, I went out and found her, and the Roberta's Pizza class, which we have, they already had the relationship. It's kind of interesting to like go out and check out restaurants, and though restaurant chefs are some of the busiest people in the city, they want to expand and try, you know, cooking in a different venue. So
yeah, and kind of like I feel, you know, as someone who works in food, it's like working at the store is different than doing a staff training for a restaurant, and it's nice to be able to have both things, because you kind of learn, you inadvertently learn more about your profession and about the things that you purvey or that you cook when you do stuff like that.
Yeah
That's really interesting. And so who would you say is your sort of is your audience who takes your classes?
Our audience, our age range is pretty wide, but I'd say we're like mid-20s into like 50s is our, like, our medium probably stops at about 40.
Okay.
But we definitely have a wide range, and people bring their families, and it's like sometimes there's always that like really enthusiastic aunt who has that nephew who's really great at cooking, and so we'll get like a 12-year-old in every once in a while, and it's always really fun.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, they're just, I'm like, if your family feels confident, then we should try and let you in the classroom. But so that's our kind of medium age range, and then from there, it's usually just excited home cooks. We have professionals often will come take like the pig butchering class because they might work the line in a kitchen, but they want to see the like breakdown of a pig. Mm. But there's a lot of couples that come, or singles looking for coupling, who come and take our classes.
I was thinking, as the singles couple and begin to have families, then you can offer a whole range of kids cooking courses, you know, in the next couple years.
Yeah, as Williamsburg like gets older in its current incarnation, the kids of our clients are growing up a little more, and so we're going to try having some kids classes in the new year, actually. So yeah,
very, very cool. Well, I'm just looking, it's time to take a really short break, but when we come back, we're going to continue chatting with Michelle Warner of the Brooklyn Kitchen and talk more about your cheese making classes. So great. Stick with us.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
And we're back on Cutting the Curd. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. You can tune in to Cutting the Curd and a whole host of other great shows at heritageradionetwork.org. Today we're talking about making cheese in the city with Michelle Warner of the Brooklyn Kitchen. And in this segment, we're going to focus a little bit more on the cheese making curriculum at Brooklyn Kitchen. We were talking about it a little bit the other day, and you were saying, you know, you guys offer sort of the 2.0 version of cheese classes. Yeah. I feel like most cheese classes in the city are more geared towards pairing or, you know, maybe learning about the different styles of cheese, but you guys actually make cheese.
Yes. Yeah. Going back to who our clientele is, I know that our students are people who want to roll up their hands. They want to make something. They're not just interested in tasting. I love a cheese tasting class. I could just, you know, taste
who doesn't,
and learn, you know?
Yeah, who doesn't like sitting there with a plate of cheese and a glass of wine? That's
absolutely
a good way to spend an afternoon. But
so Emily Acosta, who works at Italy, she's one of their cheesemongers, teaches our cheesemaking classes. And she, we do a mozzarella class. And when I started there, the mozzarella class, we would get Belgioso curd and stretch it and make mozzarella, which is kind of the, like, industry standard. Like, restaurants get that brand of curd and they stretch it and make mozzarella. And I just thought, you know, with the Brooklyn Kitchen being the kind of place where we're very from scratch, that we should, and we have all these really great farms that we're working with and can get really nice dairy, that we should try doing it from milk. And so it was a little tricky to figure out the timing, and the class is actually longer than most of our classes. It's 2.5 hours instead of 2 hours. And so students get to see the process from milk to curd to mozzarella, which is really fun.
Wow, you can do the whole thing in 2.5 hours. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's neat. And one of the things that we kind of, it was first developed by Andrew Torrens, who used to work at Beecher's. I'm not sure where he's working now, but the first class we had, half the group, their curd didn't,
it didn't set?
Yeah, it didn't set.
Uh-oh.
And it was, like, a panic, and I was like, no, we're learning. Like, you know, I'm a very, like, teachery kind of person. So, like, it's great. Like, if half of the class fails, it doesn't matter because it's not dinner. Like, we can, it's not, we're not worried that people aren't going to eat. We're going to see what didn't go right, and then we can evaluate what factors caused the cheese, the curd not to set.
And cheese making is really about that. It's not just about following a recipe always. You know, there are different sort of environmental factors. The milk might be a little bit different. The temperature might be a little bit different. And it's learning to pay attention to all those details that allows people to make cheese and make it consistently, because every time you do it, it's going to be a little bit different. So you have to kind of respond to that. So do people get bummed out if their curd doesn't set?
That was the largest, like, setback of all the classes. Occasionally one class there, one group, they won't make curd, and we can, like, they stretch each other, you know, they share. It's not, there's enough curd to go around, I guess you could say. So everyone gets the full experience, but I think it's really in the hands of the instructor, and Emily is just, like, just one of the most delightful people to be around anyway. So and Andrew's also did a great job at that too. But just to, like, you know, move the class towards understanding it's the lesson, I think, is always the way we try and handle it in all of our classes. Usually everything goes according to plan, but occasionally if someone's, you know, when you're in a learning environment, you're not going to always make things correctly. When I was in culinary school, there was definitely, like, a mayo situation where I couldn't get it to come together. And the instructor, like, was with his, like, tough French, like, culinary training, wanted me to feel bad about it, but in the end he was just like, okay, now you know, like, how to fix this, because we, you know. So there's that comes from those sorts of, you know, situations.
Right. But no, that's great. That's really great. And that is really unique. People come to the shop all the time, my shop, and they're like, how do I, you know, make mozzarella? And they think, you know, they can just buy a gallon of milk and go home and do it. And it's certainly possible, but it's a lot harder than it sounds.
Yeah.
So that's really valuable that you guys offer that.
Yeah, we have
class.
Our chef class is also, that's our other major cheese class right now. And that one is definitely, like, a whole other level where 3 days ahead of time, we start, like, this first step. And then this 2 days ahead of time, we do the first step again. So the students can see all of the steps in one condensed time period.
Yeah,
2.5 hour block.
That's awesome.
So because you can see all of those processes.
Yeah.
Because as much as, like, it would be cool if every student could come by, you know, Saturday, Sunday, Monday to see the cheese making process, it's nice that we can, like, you know, take the bites. I think I pull in my food television background for that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and it's, you know, it's just, watching cheese being made in real time is not the most exciting thing for some people. And, you know, I love the cheese making process and have made cheese at a bunch of different farms, but, you know, there's a lot of sit around and wait, you know, because you have to wait for things to ferment.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look like anything's happening, and it takes a long time.
Yeah.
And so that's nice that you can kind of condense it for people.
Yeah.
Well, so something that I really want to talk about is, sort of the popularity of cheese making, and sort of this whole, like, urban homesteading idea. It's like pickling and preserving is, like, kind of cool, you know, butchering is cool, but cheese making still kind of like, eh, like not, I know, let's not so cool. Yeah. So what's up with that? What do you attribute that to, you know, seeing all this, you know, ingesting all the food media that you do? And,
I think that there's such a, like, I guess a pig is an animal that you can see quickly broken down into usable parts. And that's really straightforward. And when you interact with like a pork chop, it's a pork chop, you know. Even if you're making a meatball, it's very simple. And I think that cheese has such a wide variety. And, you know, everyone loves, like, people, you know, go nuts for some brie or love a good cheddar. And there's just such a wide range. It's kind of hard to, like, wrap your mind around the, like, smaller bites.
Mm-hmm.
And in classes, in cooking classes, it's definitely important to focus on those smaller elements and then build on those skills into more, you know, because once you make a mozzarella ball, you could, you know, burrata is another arm of the mozzarella world, or smoked mozzarella even, you know, we need to, like, learn how to take the smaller bites. And so I think it's a matter of people, like, getting a little bit more comfortable and understanding that. And, like, if you've ever made ricotta, it's incredibly easy to make ricotta, and it's very satisfying and delicious. And from there, you know, hopefully people can, like, see the, like, simple parts and then expand on from there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned a brie or a cheddar, you know, people liking these certain types of cheeses. I guess cheese making is, you know, has its challenges as well, because it's not possible to make, I mean, it's possible to make a lot of different types of cheese, but some of those aged cheeses, it's really hard, near impossible to make at home.
Yeah.
An aged cheddar or Gruyere style.
Yeah.
I recently did a staff training at a restaurant, and a guy came up to me afterwards and he was like, "So you're telling me that I can go online and buy cultures, and I could buy the cultures to make Gruyere?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, you know, technically you could do that." And so, but I could see the wheels turning in his mind, and he thought that he was going to go home and make Gruyere, which, you know, is a giant 80-pound cheese that needs to age in special caves for like a year or more. And he was like, you know, it was just really funny because I was like, well, it's not that simple. You know what I mean? Like Chèvre or mozzarella, absolutely. You can totally do that at home. But these more aged cheeses are a little bit trickier.
Yeah. I think that it's just like when you're working with like sausage versus salami, you know, like, salami is, you know, it's also aged, and it has to be in a specific temperature-controlled space, and it needs, like, the right kind of bacteria, and just like cheese making. But sausage making is very, very simple and approachable, you know. Being, like, Meat Hook has flavor combinations that I, you know, I just appreciate and can't make myself, but
the bacon cheeseburger.
The bacon cheeseburger sausage.
That's a good one.
The green chorizo. Yeah. All of them, anyway. But if you're excited about making sausage, start there and then, you know, work up to a place where you could maybe try curing your own meats and just, like, making chèvre, and then you can age it. But, yeah, to, like, if you're really going for the next level of making Gruyère, you obviously can't. You're going to have to, like, maybe, like, go on vacation someplace for a year.
Maybe the Brooklyn kitchen is going to have to build cheese caves.
Yeah. All right,
and then you can, like, you know, have an affinage course is the second part. But, well, this is kind of a good segue then, because, you know, we're talking about people not really being able to make these more complicated cheeses at home so easily, and yet they do. I just heard last Friday, actually, there was a cheese speakeasy that was put on by Matt Spiegler, who is a blogger. He writes the blog Cheese Notes. He's actually been on the show before. And Jessica Stennett was his cohort in putting this thing on. And they basically had this event at a bar in Bushwick, and all these urban cheesemakers brought their homemade cheeses, and people went to town, and they just had cheese and beer. And from what I could see from the pictures, I mean, there were all different types of cheeses. There were wash-rind cheeses, fresh cheeses, bloomy cheeses. Mm-hmm. It was really impressive. So somehow, somewhere, here are making these cheeses.
You can do a lot of sort of rigging with various refrigerator situations, like wine fridges and things like that.
Yeah.
So I know there's like some woman who has a great blog, which I can't remember at this moment, who makes a lot of her own cheeses.
It might have been this woman. What's her Jessica's blog. I'm trying to... I don't know what Jessica's blog is. I'm sorry, Jessica. I will find it and we'll put it in our notes on the website. But I feel like the vanguard is there. They are making cheese and they will make it cool.
Yeah.
And someday...
they can give me a call. I'll help them make it cool.
Yeah.
Together.
Absolutely.
No, I think that when people, you know, I'm in the... My desk is actually in the kitchen, so I get to interact with our customers who come in. And we have two classrooms, but our downstairs classroom is like two-story, beautiful brick-walled... dynamic room. If you haven't seen it, come check it out. But people are always like, ooh, you know, chef making or whatever. They get so excited. It's a matter of like them feeling like they could do it at home. And sometimes, you know, the name might sound good, but like the actual follow through isn't always there. I feel like even in our fresh pasta class, which making fresh pasta is just one of the best ways to enjoy pasta. And that class is very successful. But I wonder, like, how many people are going to actually go home and do it? Because it does, you can like, I know some women who like get together once a month or every couple months and they all make a bunch of pasta and then they freeze it.
Mm.
So then they have fresh pasta for a while, but it's like you're doing it together and it's social.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, it's a good
idea. It's like the Stitch and Bitch, but for pasta making.
Exactly. I was like, I want to do that. I've done that, like, when I lived in Chicago, I did that with a friend after we took a fresh pasta class at a place like the Brooklyn Kitchen. And that was a good way to, like, take a bite out of something that's can be, like, time-consuming but pretty simple. But then you have, like, the investment in the long term instead of just, like, one evening's worth of pasta.
Exactly. Well, and then, like you said, it's a social thing. And it's much more fun to cook with friends than it is to cook by yourself. So, like, I like it. Group cheese making. Mm-hmm. We could totally do that.
Yeah. Well, the speakeasy sounds fascinating.
I know. We're going to have to go to the next one. I heard about this one too late, but apparently they're planning another one.
Oh.
And it was sold out. So, you know, there was a lot of interest. I feel like maybe, it's funny, the cheese speakeasy, it kind of reminds me of the home brewers. You know what I mean? I feel like there's some similarities there between like people who, you know, because it requires a certain patience and a certain almost like obsession to do this kind of stuff at home. So
yeah,
maybe, I don't know. There's the homebrew cheese making correlation.
Yeah.
Do you guys do any brewing classes?
Yeah, we have a homebrew class and we have an advanced homebrew class. Less often, once a month, we have a home brewing class.
That's great.
And we have a whole section in the store to buy everything you could possibly need to brew beer and make cider and things like that. So we have a pretty strong homebrew clientele for sure.
That's awesome. And
there's definitely like, that's definitely like a clique industry or world. Of like
it is. Yeah. No, very. It's a tribe. It's a tribe for sure. Yeah. So what about events in your space? I know that people have all different kinds of events of their own in your classroom. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
I mean, we have our own like event. We host our own events for just like private classes. But then there's Evidco, which is a like small business development group. Evidco is an acronym that I don't want to take on. But once a month they meet, they have... these free meetings in our space and people can learn about like setting up insurance for your small business or how do I like
that's great
package my food for my small business in a legal way. And that's a really great like, you know, monthly
resource.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I've worked a long day, but I kind of want to stay and hear about, you know, accounting for your small business. Just fascinating things.
Yeah, you can't learn enough about that stuff. There's always more.
But we have a lot of different little events. Ivan Rahman, we're opening a space next Wednesday at Gotham West Market. It's our second location.
That's going to be big. 11th and 44th. Okay, Gotham West Market. Everybody write it down. Next Wednesday, November 20th is the big day.
And Ivan Orkin, who has a couple of ramen shops in Japan, is opening his first U.S. location there too. And we had an event for him to like kind of test out some recipes and get some, you know, New York interest in the kind of food he's making. So that's another kind of event that we've done. And
sounds delicious.
Put together a beer and cheese night for sure. We've got a good relationship with great brewers and
awesome.
A lot of great cheese people.
I think that would be a good party.
Yeah.
That would be a very good party.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Michelle, for being on the show. Sure. It's been fascinating to hear about your trajectory professionally and all the great classes that you offer at Brooklyn Kitchen. And if people want to learn more, your website, brooklynkitchen.com?
Thebrooklynkitchen.com.
Thebrooklynkitchen.com.
Yes. So check us out.
Check it out. Yeah, learn to make cheese. It's cool.
Yeah, we'll have January and February classes up shortly for purchasing, and we're definitely getting stocked up for Thanksgiving.
Awesome. Well, until next time, this was Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.